Blog Talk Radio.
And hello and welcome, everybody. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Coach Haywood Hill, and also, because we are making this super mega show now, Reggie Walker's joining us for the first time here. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
Hey, I'm doing good, Jeremy. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. You know, for the Super Show, we decided to combine End Zone and Foul Zone because there is so much to talk about, and that way we can fit it all into one convenient morsel for everybody to enjoy for the week. You know, some of the things, there's a lot of notable free agents we want to hit on across the league because it's about that time. Usually the 1st of June is when a lot of these big free agents start landing places, and we see other people dropped and moved around different ways. And, you know, there's a short list that NFL.com and Yahoo Sports and everybody's had their short list, and we're going to kind of go over some of the ones, some of the more notable ones, and, you know, where we think they could land or if they still have a spot in the league. You know, the first one we wanted to hit on was JerMichael Finley, the tight end out of Green Bay, most notably. And because of his injuries, he's kind of out in kind of a weird spot right now. Where do you guys see him going?
Well, I'll start by saying Mr. Finley, you know, suffered some injuries, but he has cleared waivers as far as a medical waiver is concerned. So he very well is going to be sought out as a commodity now. He's a receiving-style tight end there, you know, that's the position and that's the direction of the league mm-hmm. with these receiving style tight ends. I can see him going to Oakland under a former director of scouting and now out there, Reggie McKenzie. I also can see New England picking him up. They suffer tremendously at that spot. It's a big part of their staple offense. So I can see one of those two teams probably biting. And the rumor mill has it that there is a mystery team that he's going to visit on Friday. He has not revealed the source of that particular team as of yet, but we can kind of put it out there and guess and see, but he is at least a sought-after guy.
You know, would that mystery team possibly be those Dirty Birds of Atlanta who could be looking to replace Tony Gonzalez?
There's a possibility. I mean, he would be a great fit. I mean, he most definitely can plug and play right now, and he is accustomed to getting a lot of balls thrown his way. So I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta made a move with him like that. It would be a very good move.
Yeah, me personally, some of the rumblings I've heard has been Miami has been a team that's been mentioned as a possible landing spot for Finley. I've also heard Tennessee. I'm not really sure about how he fits there, especially given the fact that they've got Jared Cook there now, they have Jared Cook there now. So I don't know how he fits there, but Miami is definitely the one that has been mentioned since they don't really have a receiver presence beyond Mike Wallace down there.
Yes, so. And, you know, until we find out who that mystery team is, I guess we'll live in fantasy land and hope he lands in our favorite team's lap. Moving along, we got a long-term veteran wide receiver Santonio Holmes, who has been a little banged up in the knee department for a wide receiver, but it just feels like this guy's still got some gas left in the tank.
Well, one of the things with Mr. Holmes that I see, that, you know, he's 30 years old now as a receiver, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean he can't play, but it's a lot of young receivers out there.
Right.
So he's faced with that challenge that most players face when they hit the 30 wall, as I like to call it. He's still productive. However, with so many young receivers out there, it's going to be quite challenging for him out there now, especially when the receivers are becoming bigger. They're taller guys. Mm-hmm. So now you have to bring a lot more to the table just in what you did, you know, during the time that you were in Pittsburgh. You have other things now that are out there. And if you look at his career beyond that, you start to see that reflect. So, you know, good luck to him. But it's a tall order right now for him finding a spot, plus the salary cap.
Right.
Now, the team, Santonio was an interesting guy, too. The rumblings and the landing spot that has been mentioned quite often for him has been Seattle. With them losing Golden Tate to Detroit this year, they have an obvious void on that side of the field, on both sides of the field, really, because I don't think they have an actual legitimate number one. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him land in Seattle this year.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. And, you know, given that Santonio's actually been, when he's healthy, he's actually pretty solid. I mean, he's been the deep threat a couple times. He's been a great route runner. He's a good teammate. He was really good in New York up with the Jets when they needed, you know, somebody to solidify that locker room. He was actually kind of the voice that most people would listen to. So, you know, maybe he can find that kind of veteran leadership role. You know, Carolina has yet to really help their wide receiver core except for through the draft. So, I mean, he could kind of come in as that veteran experience and show these young guys, you know, how to produce on this level.
Yeah, Carolina actually would be a now that you mentioned that, Carolina would be a great landing spot for him as well, considering, you know, just what you said, on top of the fact that Cam Newton needs somebody else to target. He definitely can't be relying on a rookie this year for that tall order that they've got coming up, you know, with this season.
I also would be interested to see, you know, how the organization structures that, being that they took a veteran guy out of that position and you're trying to plug and play it with another veteran. So is it a money issue? Is it an injury issue? Because if it wasn't an injury issue, then you're going to be hard-pressed to try to, I guess, justify, you know, giving up a staple vet for an incoming vet. That's one of the things that they have to think about as well.
Yeah, correct. And as we move into you know, these are in no particular order, but as we move to the third guy on the list, it hits home for a lot of our audience, especially the Falcons Zone people. As we talk about cornerback Asante Samuel and where he could possibly land. I mean, once again, we're looking at aging veteran. He did a lot for Atlanta as far as teaching the new guys how to step into those roles so early, and they were able to step in so fast that I think it kind of earned Asante an earlier exit than he thought he would have in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mr. Samuels did a good job while he was here. He's a proven guy. You can't take that from him at all. He's older now. You know, he's 33, and you can see this. Because I coached the position, you can see the steps that are lost. So now, where can he find a place? Where can he find a home? Again, with a lot of this young talent that's coming in, and people have to remember, you got guys sitting on rosters that were drafted 2-3 years ago who are now have legitimately waited their turn to step in. I don't know. He would have to take – his deal would have to be structured where it's 1 year and no guarantee.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going to be one of those kind of situations where he has to land somewhere at the right time in the right situation, because it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough with all the talent that's out there this year, especially at that position.
Right, exactly, and that's what I was thinking with Asante specifically. I mean, mentioning just what you said before, the decline in his performance is what's going to keep him off of a lot of rosters, especially the way people are building defenses now with speed and coverability on those corner ends. You can't afford a gambler, and he's a gambler. He has the jump routes. He has the, you know, play zone. He's not a man-to-man. He's not an island anymore. And so I can't really think of, with the way defenses are now being built, a la Seattle Seahawks, I just don't see a team where he would fit.
Yeah, you know, Seattle's always interested in adding veteran leadership and stuff like that. But, yeah, I'm just not real sure where there's a good fit right now, unless, you know, maybe Jerry Jones and Dallas would want to take a flyer on maybe trying to help a defense that is almost on its last thread, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, maybe Dallas might take a chance. But, again, it's a tall order because
yeah.
You're only talking still one player.
Right.
And a defense that needs a lot of help.
Right.
And so it could be a lot of pressure put on him. Whoever takes that job is going to be a lot of pressure put on, especially if they already have a long resume behind them.
Right.
You know, the expectations are going to be high. And if that doesn't produce, then you can easily find yourself being – the fall guy or the sacrificial lamb, if you will, for the lack of better terms, for those things not happening. So,
correct. And, you know, as you say, somebody with a longer history and career as Asante has, you know, jumping to one of the next guys on the list, somebody with a little shorter but, you know, very dynamic, and he's been a big playmaker up until recent years, linebacker James Harrison. You know, that's really where – Jerry Jones probably needs to look in Dallas as far. He needs a lot of linebacker help with Sean Lee out. Could he look to James Harrison to be the guy for this year?
Well, I mean, look, you know, taking into consideration what he did in Cincinnati, again, that's going to be a tough thing to look at, because you have to look at numbers as well. You know, whether people want to agree with them or disagree, or their heartstrings are being pulled on by their favorite players, the reality is that you have to deal with numbers. And if you look at the numbers last year, I think he only had 2 sacks. And,
yep.
You know, how are you going to justify that again? You know, again with the salary, again with needing so much on that defense. You know, if you go aged veterans, I mean, people will know the names. But and again, I'm not taking anything away from these players' careers, but we do know that at some point the career begins to go in a different direction. The
yep.
pendulum swings the other direction. And I don't know if the numbers last year, especially with Cincinnati,
yeah.
justify a move into Dallas now, especially when they gave up a great
right.
player, in
right.
my opinion.
Yeah.
So if that was the case, you pay more money to the player that you have that has been proven with those numbers, with those preceding years with him, or you go this route and you already know what you got from last year, and you might get maybe match those numbers, maybe not get anything at all. So it's challenging. I don't know if that would be looked at Dallas needs right now.
Yeah, and given that he was just mainly a role player with the Bengals, I mean, he did a lot of great things for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Steelers let him go for a reason, I thought, and it could be, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Mr. Harrison played in, you know, those guys are notorious for being a little dinged up and a little worn out. A little more worn out than most places coming into the league. So, I mean, he could have already reached that glass ceiling at this point, and he could be on the decline already.
Well, as a coach, and we've had these conversations several times amongst coaches and coaches' meetings, and when you're talking to director player personnel, and when you're talking to GMs and even owners, you know, everyone gets excited when a name comes down. It immediately is brought into the coach's office to discuss. And one of the things that has to always be in the back of our minds and to stay objective about is why they're trading him. You know, if the player has shown good numbers or has been very productive, I mean, the draft doesn't end with just drafting a player. It's now watching the continuum of that career. And so if a player comes up as a free agent, I mean, there are some tangibles and there are some things in place. Let's look at where he was going to be against the salary cap. That's one way to look at it. Let's look at the injuries. That's another way to look at it. But then at the end of the day, as coach, we have to look at the productivity of the player and how productive was that player. And more importantly, can that player fit into this system and plug and play now? You know, as veterans, that's what you have to expect that from your veterans. And, again, you know, someone else might want the player, but in reality, does it fit what you need at the end of the day, or do you end up trading him or even releasing him before the season's over?
Yeah, it's definitely true. And didn't mean to skip him on the list we have it, or throw a curveball, but, you know, going back to another tight end, maybe arguably one of those guys that will never quite know the potential because of some of the injuries and setbacks he had, including, I believe, he tore his ACL or MCL last year in Miami. But, you know, tight end Dustin Keller, he was, you know, Mark Sanchez's probably best target as a Jet, and then tried to transition because of injuries. He had to take the offer from the Dolphins, which he tried to make the most of before getting dinged up. And just, it's never good to get carted off a field, and I'm not sure how that knee's holding up at this point.
Well, truly, it's going to be tested. And before any team makes a decision on even bringing him into training camp, he's going to have to pass a tremendous amount of stress test on the leg itself, on the knee itself, and all of the cuts. All the consistently, you know, once they get him, you know, a little worn out through the route package, they'll come back and run drills against him to see how he's holding up when he's fatigued. You know, is he getting a little bit? Is he favoring it at all? So he'll be, wherever he goes to do his workouts, he's going to be under the watchful eye of a lot of people, more especially the team doctor. So, you know, again, you know, coming off a knee injury, you had the same thing with Grimes.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in Atlanta, you know, you had to go back out there and really prove that it will hold up. So, again, with this situation, I wish the young man well. But, again, when you're talking knee injuries, it's just always one of those iffy things. And when someone takes a chance on you, you have to, you know, most definitely maximize your opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Reg, you have any idea where this guy could land or if he lands?
Yeah, and I was sitting here pondering that as well, and to Coach Hill's point, the injuries. I mean, looking at Kaepernick, contract today and the big money that these guys are commanding and the tightness of the salary cap and you know, building players and developing players. I think that's kind of the route teams are more willing to go. And even with Atlanta, with Tialo, I mean, great fit, could possibly come in and catch some balls. But do you risk paying out a bigger salary for a guy like that that may not necessarily make it the year? You don't know what kind of condition he's in. Or do you just develop what you have? I think for any of these players that we're talking about, I think that's going to be the primary point that most of these teams are going to have to consider.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a lot of the thing. And I didn't put him on here because I'm a homer for the guy, but I wish it would. I really want it to pan out because once I give this guy a fair shake, I realize the potential that he could have. But, you know, Josh Freeman was released by the Giants, I believe, last week. And as a quarterback, especially the way a lot of these guys are doing, you know, having the mobile quarterbacks and the read option and stuff like that, this is something that he is actually pretty good at. He's ran it a few times with different other areas, but the type of quarterback that he is, he can be your stand in the pocket. He can be your transition into other things. I mean, kind of a healthier way of scrambling around if he has to. But given that the best fits, in my opinion, for him would have been Seattle or San Francisco, they've already got guys to back up, you know, to back up their stars with the same skill set. I mean, is there anywhere in the league that would give this guy a fair shake?
Well, I mean, again, let's take Jacksonville. I mean, I think with them having a young plug and play and compete.
That was actually one of the first teams that came to mind.
I could see him going to Jacksonville. I think that he's probably in the best position when you talk about quarterbacks. And once they get into camp and start looking at what they have in the backups, I think his ability to find a job won't be as hard as some of the players that we mentioned before because you have, you know, not only just two or three quarterbacks that fit, you know, that fit into a system, but in other positions you have three or four players that can compete. So I think that Jacksonville would not be a bad place for him to seek some employment or Jacksonville to really look at him, to be honest with you.
And there's not much tread on the tires with this guy. I mean, he's only been in the league a handful of years, and not all of that was as a starter. So, you know, in the backup plan in case Chad Henne gets hurt or something happens there. I was also thinking, not just because we talk about him, but I was also thinking Atlanta might want to give him a look just to see as a second or third option. Just, you know, maybe he's better than somebody on the roster, maybe he's not, but you got to protect that $100 million quarterback.
Yeah, on top of that, let's not forget that Carolina doesn't have a strong backup. At least I don't know who that backup is off the top of my head. So, again, you know, when you're talking about situations where you're trying to build a postseason team going into training camp, you have to realistically look at those options. What happens if my starter goes down? Who can step in with the game experience? Who's taken enough rest to do that and seen it? And more importantly, whether the organizations believe in that player enough to give them that opportunity.
You know, why not Cincinnati at this point? Because Andy Dalton's kind of up in the air. I know they went after him in the draft. I believe they were the ones who landed A.J. McCarron. But, you know, you're not sure exactly what you're going to get out of McCarron either. So, you know, he's at least a solid guy. You can look at film and go, he did have some really great moments. There wasn't that many, you know, he's not Mark Sanchez. He didn't have butt fumble play. He didn't have some of these bad things happen. He was just on a team that he either didn't fit the scheme or with a coach that didn't really want him on the field.
Right.
I'll tell you a team that I would like to see him at, even though I hate them, but as a fan, would be the New Orleans Saints. You got Drew Brees down there who's getting a little longer in the tooth, but more importantly, you've got Sean Payton. And if there's anybody that could develop that guy and get whatever there is out of him, because I do honestly believe during his time in Tampa Bay, his issue wasn't that he didn't have the talent. His issue was Greg Schiano. Greg Schiano never gave him that nod, that this is my guy. I think Lovie Smith would have had a better chance with this guy had he still been there. But I think Sean Payton might be the guy that can get it out of him if he were to end up in New Orleans. And he wouldn't be under the pressure like he was in Minnesota to come in and save the day.
Right. And as somebody who followed the Buccaneers for many a year, especially with those particular coaches there, I very much agree that as soon as Lovie took the job, he kind of wishes that's one of the players he could have back because he would fit a Lovie Smith offense almost 100%.
Absolutely he would. Absolutely he would.
And I tried to look up the backup for Cam, but they don't currently have it listed on here. I'll have to try to find it. And, in fact, if anybody out there listening happens to know Cam's backup, we'd love to know because we're not quite sure. And if we're not sure, maybe Cam's not sure. And that could affect his play, at least as training camp start and all that. But, you know, really the last guy I want to hit on for now is Ed Reed. And it's – I hate to say it, but it's almost become kind of a you know, after-school special story as far as – it's almost sad watching him play because he used to be so good that as we're watching the decline, we're not sure if we want to tell him, you know, keep trying hard, keep digging, man, or like, hey, you might want to save your legacy and just, you know, maybe try to coach or get back at some other level.
Well, one of the things I like to say about Mr. Reed, he was, you know, in his youthful years, he was a very, very dynamic player when he came into the league. There were some segments earlier that I spoke of the dying athlete in the beginning of End Zone, and this is the thing that I speak of. Is when you see those athletes beginning to lose that step or that two steps over time, and it shows on film, and it shows in their reactions to plays. I'm more so concerned about not what he can do, but what he can't do, and if he can be hurt doing it at this point. Again, for whatever the reason, Mr. Reed feels that something is in him. He goes out. He's done enough to continue to keep himself employed. But I'm really concerned now with the dying athlete perspective of this. You know,
right.
At some point you want to – I saw it in Ray Lewis's game. You know, it was in the Super Bowl you saw that, and you saw it throughout that year. And he was able to come to the conclusion it's hard to look at that
right.
on film as yourself and realize that, yes, you know, I can see it. But when does it end? You know, so I hope that Mr. Reed you know, will consider, you know, this year. And, again, I would rather see him save his legacy personally. I would like to see that versus him taking a chance of going out there and trying to overdo it and take a injury that he maybe cannot never heal from.
Right.
So I would just – me personally, I would just rather see that. But it's so hard when you've been a Warrior for so long to just hang him up.
Yeah, right. And, you know, really to me, he should have took the ending that his good buddy Ray Lewis was giving him because Ray Lewis's last year, they could have went out on top together, you know, hand in hand, fist bump, whatever they want to do. But he felt that he still had more to give. And, you know, we just hope it works out for him because he was such a dynamic player. I mean, he was one of the – he was part of that just dynamic team even down in as a Miami Hurricane that just – they were hard to beat. And you just and he's one of the probably arguably one of the best ball hawks in the league. Is you can't throw to his side.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, you know, you go look at him on film. The resume is there, but also if you look at the film currently, it's year to year. And so again, I wish him much success in trying to find another team if that's what he feels he can do. But more importantly, I'm concerned about his health. And what he does after the game. I'm more interested to see what happens when you leave the game versus trying to stay in it at this point.
Right. And
Jerry,
you know,
through some research here, the backup for Carolina is Derek Anderson, actually, from
okay.
Cleveland. And the third string is Joe Webb from Minnesota. So they may be okay at the backup quarterback position there.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to say that those guys are, you know, super solid, but, I think you could count on them. If you know, hopefully nothing happens to Cam because he's, whether you love him or hate him or whether he plays for your team or not, he's one of the guys that you need to sit down and watch play because he does a lot of special things. But if something does happen, I feel like one of those two, if not both, could at least toe the line until he's back.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the free agent market, that's something that a GM most definitely has to pay particular detail to, because you're looking at a draft class that brought everybody got something in the draft on top of the players that you already have in waiting that have been in a holding pattern. So a lot of this is going to ride on training camp. I mean, I think the training camps this year are going to be – they're always competitive because you're trying to maintain a job or to get a job. It is a job interview. But this year, I think it's just every training camp is just going to have so much talent in it. I mean, it's going to be a lot of people that are going to just be holding on, and it's going to be some surprises. Believe me, I promise you, it's going to be some surprises. There's some shifts in the atmosphere with some teams when they begin to kick the season off. So don't be surprised that you see a lot of name changing.
Right, exactly. And as we head into a break here, as the producer is giving us the stink eye again, that we need to go to a break. On the other side of the break, we'll bring up Jim Irsay and Roger Goodell and tell you how those two are linked to the current moment. We'll mention the Cowboys linebacker search, as we've kind of hit on it a little bit, and a few other news and notes before we get right into Falcon Zone on the other side of the hour. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And we are back. Appreciate you guys sticking with us. And as always, try to visit and support our sponsors. We appreciate everything that they allow us to do and give us the opportunity to talk about football all week, which is never a bad thing. But as we come back, I had mentioned that we wanted to talk about Roger Goodell, who's the commissioner, and Jim Irsay, the Colts owner. A lot of people have asked me, and I'm sure they've asked you guys as well, has Goodell punished Jim Irsay for his February DUI, I believe it was prescription medication, as opposed to a DUI with alcohol? You know, why hadn't there been a punishment to this point? Because players are typically punished almost on the other side of maybe a jail term.
Well, one of the things, there's a huge part of the Red Sea with owners and players. Players are in a union. They have a collective bargaining agreement. They have code of conducts and policies. And I'm sure some of that applies to the owners as well. But I think with this situation, who's to say he hasn't given a punishment? It just might not have been publicized. So I'm sure with all that took place with just law enforcement and the judiciary system, period, that's one piece of it. But I'm sure they've had a meeting about it, and I'm sure that there's something in the pipeline or something already attached to it that says that, hey, you know, we can't tolerate that behavior out of owners as well.
You guys still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
Okay. Well, on the Irsay thing, I tell you what, I think Irsay is definitely going to be Roger Goodell's Donald Sterling, if you will. He can set the tone, but he works for the guy. I mean, at the end of the day, the commissioner is there to represent the owners. He's going to have to hammer him like he's hammered the players in order to manage and maintain what semblance of respect he has with the players, because despite the fact that he came in, you know, kind of laying down the law early on, I believe, and it feels like the players actually like him a lot more than when they did when he initially took the job. But he could easily lose it if he doesn't do something, you know, to this guy of some significance. It can't just be a slap on the wrist because it wouldn't be a slap on the wrist for players.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, only time will tell as to what Roger Goodell may have Jim Irsay do to make up for his transgressions. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to be as severe as a player, but like we've said, there's no collective bargaining agreement that encompasses an owner. An owner is kind of a separate entity, and, you know, we'll just have to see what happens from there. But as we transition from one owner's dilemma to another, the Cowboys need a inside linebacker, and that is an understatement. You know, letting DeMarcus Ware, who could play defensive line or linebacker, walk pretty much. He's got a little bit of wear and tear on him, but they were and skipping in the draft as they didn't really go defense all that much. Now they have their leader Sean Lee out. A few of the rumored people they've been targeting or that they could target. Were Jonathan Vilma, the former Saint, and Brian Urlacher, the former Bear. It's actually come out that Jerry Jones said Brian Urlacher would not be a guy we would pursue, and that's, you know, no disrespect to him or nothing like that, but they had actually pursued him before he decided to retire. He wouldn't really fit the scheme they're going for. Is there a guy out there that they should go after?
I don't know because, I mean, there again, we brought the draft up, and there was an opportunity there in the draft to grab, you know, a young player. And build around that young player based on what you needed. I mean, I thought they were going to do a lot of more defensive picks. With that being said, now the question is what, you know, players are available in the free agent market, and then what is the salary cap? How does that play into the salary cap now? Because that's what you have to look at. These are players that have already been proven in the system now. Mm-hmm. So now can you find that, or can you fish it from somewhere else? And if so, at what consequence to you now versus the draft where people could have lived with having a young, inexperienced player but a talent that we can see bloom and blossom in another 3 years? I mean, the Cowboys have a lot.
Yeah.
They have a lot going into training camp, and I don't know. I mean, it might be, you know, for the lack of better terms and no disrespect to the Cowboys, it could be the beer guy. I mean, who knows what's going to show up in training camp for them with so many voids that they have to fill, in my opinion, on the defensive side of the ball. It's just a lot.
I mean, are they going to
have...
Right,
and Dallas was already one of those teams that was up against the salary cap anyway. So, and Urlacher's definitely not going to come in and play for beans, although I wouldn't mind seeing Urlacher there. I think he'd be a decent pickup in for what has happened to them with Sean Lee again. But I think, like Coach said, that's a position that they should have addressed in the draft. Of course, no one can foresee the future, so they didn't foresee this happening with Sean Lee. But the guy has injury issues, so it's obviously something that they may need a rental this year, but they definitely need to make that a priority going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And as we transition out of you know, one odd situation into another, and it's not really odd per se, but Colin Kaepernick has made sure that we will continue to talk about the 49ers on a weekly basis with this new deal that he has. I haven't heard the exact figure, but I know it's upwards of $110 million over the six-year extension that's going to keep him there through 2020, and at least 60 or 61 of this is guaranteed. Now, the deal does leave the 49ers room to re-sign or sign other players. He made sure to make that apparent in the two or three clips I saw earlier today. And, you know, the thing that I really wanted to bring up is not just Colin Kaepernick getting, in my opinion, a little overpaid. Now, he has the numbers, but, you know, he's not Russell Wilson. He doesn't have a Super Bowl trophy. But there's six guys in the next 2 years that this deal could have a huge impact on them and their team. And this year that would be Cam Newton in Carolina, Andy Dalton in Cincinnati, and Alex Smith in Kansas City, just for the simple fact that their negotiations will be starting up this year. And then next year, we're looking at Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, RG3 in Washington, and the aforementioned Russell Wilson in Seattle. How does this impact the league, a contract like this?
He just drove the numbers out the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, he's drove the numbers out the roof. And for him as a player, it's a great contract. I mean, you cannot deny that it's a great contract. The question now is, will he live up to all of the extended time in the contract? He walked into a great situation, very good football team, a lot of young players, weapons all over the place, offensively and defensively. But now that free agent kicks in over the next couple of years with a lot of those players that are there with him, will this team look like that and will he still have those type of weapons in place 3 years from now? Because now that there's a high expectation on us going to the Super Bowl and winning it this go-round, not just getting to the conference championship, but getting into the big game and closing it with the period at the end of the sentence saying that we're the new Super Bowl world champions.
Well, I mean, if you're Cam Newton and you look at the Panthers when you sit down at the table and go, I'm better than that guy, so maybe I should make $150 million over 6 years or $200 million. You know, the sky's the limit on somebody like that.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying with all these quarterbacks. And then you take Russell Wilson, who won it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now when he steps to the table, you know, I think it was good from the standpoint that it brought the attention to the position again, and it's always as it always has, but now the numbers are starting to jump again. But the question is how does that affect your team overall? You know, that's going to – and I don't know. I mean, I hope Kaepernick can live up to this large contract because that's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of pressure once you start hitting the $100 million mark as a quarterback to continue to be very consistent because now your pay scale is in the rankings of the Tom Brady's, of the Peyton Mannings. You know, now you're there, the Drew Breeses. You're there with that those group, the Aaron Rodgers. Now the question is, do you live up? And the status of those guys who have consistently done it for a number of years.
Right, and you guys mentioned Russell Wilson. I think that's really where his pressure is going to come from because now you have gotten boatloads of money over a guy that actually has a trophy. So it's going to be an interesting year for Kaepernick. I'm not convinced of his upsize and that it matches what he received, but, I mean, congratulations to him for being able to land such a big contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once again, only time will tell, and so will those pocketbooks and calculators as to you know, the numbers that they could come up with. But, you know, before we get out of here, before we go to another break, as once again we're getting signal for another break, when we come back we will be jumping into Falcon Zone, and talking about everything from Julio Jones to the new defensive line. But we did want to kind of tease something for next week. Next week, we're going to really tackle this wonderful HBO show, Hard Knocks, and kind of explain it more to a lot of people who haven't seen it or to even fans and, you know, get a great inside look. Is it a great inside look for a team or an organization, or is it a big distraction? And also, there was a study done that suggests that crime rates dropped when the Chicago Bears played. But, as I said, we'll talk about that more next week. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking Julio Jones and his injury. Just bear with us. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And that's right, we are in the Falcon Zone now. Do not adjust those dials. We have just made it one big super show today because it's just that important.
once again being joined by Coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker. Hopefully you guys are still tuned in to us and all. But I did want to jump into the Julio Jones injury, starting with which to me is one of the key Falcon personnel things over the offseason. We've heard the basic, you know, safe answers that, his development's coming well. And even Julio said, yeah, everything's on schedule and everything's doing good. But realistically, I don't see this guy coming back till at least training camp, which is a couple more months away.
Yeah, I definitely. Everything that you're seeing up until this point, I mean, the talks about possibly trading for receivers and even we talked earlier on End Zone about Santonio Holmes and maybe Jermichael Finley coming in to try to provide some of that receiver help. I think, again, they are really trying to be cautious with this guy for several reasons. A, you can't afford to go into another year without him. And then B, more importantly, this is the final year of his contract, and he, too, is going to be sitting at the table here very shortly asking and commanding for what I think is going to be a tremendous amount of money. So you've got to, and you have yet to see an entire year with Julio healthy. So all of those things are kind of playing into it now. So it's going to be an interesting setup to training camp. You think training camp, I don't think it's going to be until, you know, towards the latter part of training camp. I don't think they're going to rush this guy back at all.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Rick, with what you're saying. One of the things you mentioned, which was very, very instrumental in the talks on Mr. Jones, is the fact that he's in the last year of his contract. That can be a double-edged sword. Why do I say this? It's because as a GM, they're going to look at, okay, where's the productivity being? He's been productive when he's been healthy, but can you command this money right now with the history that we have in front of us? So that's another thing that Atlanta might look at as they go to the table in that last year. I mean, he's going to have to they got to be really careful with him and how they play this out to keep him healthy all year. So hopefully, you know, everything is on schedule, like they're saying. Hopefully he does get, you know, into training camp and, you know, you can see a healthy Julio Jones running around. But now once you move toward the season, how does this play into the last year of the contract and the productivity he has to have to command the big dollars at the position?
Right. And one other thing that was brought to my attention in a discussion I had with another friend was in relation to the Falcons having the exclusivity on this force plate software or scenario that they use to evaluate players. And one of the topics that was discussed and we discussed was that they not only did draft picks or draft pick potentials, but they did their current roster. So I'd be interested to know what his numbers were and what came out of it and how it's going to factor into, A, how they bring him back, and, B, his contract discussion. So it's going to be very interesting this year.
Well, and, you know, we've been trying to figure out where a particular free agent signing factors in. Did they add Devin Hester to try to make up for some of the speed that Julio could lose after this injury?
Well, I personally think they added Devin Hester, A, because Atlanta has not had a legitimate special teams guy since Eric Weems, maybe, if you want to call him legitimate. But I think they brought Devin in specifically to do what he does. I don't think that there's going to be, you know, you'll see a few offensive sets with him, but I really don't think he's going to be their answer, and I don't think they're considering him to be their answer. I think he's just going to do exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, and it's nothing personal to any of the return guys they've had, but I'd say the last legitimate game breaker they had was probably Tim Dwight, and that was many years ago.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Mr. Tim Dwight out of Iowa. Absolutely.
But, as far as the video thing, we can take it the same way the media and the Falcons are taking it, just day by day, and, you know, same bat time, same bat channel to tune in and see what today's episode is going to bring us. But, you know, as we transition from the offensive side of the ball to the defensive side of the ball, the additions of Tyson Jackson and Paul Soleil, I wish I could say his name, but for some reason it just doesn't work in my head. But in adding those guys, they add the size and physicality to the D-line that I think Atlanta's been missing. And Coach Smith has actually said that they needed more nastiness, which for what I took was not, you know, a Taylor Lewan-like player that was in the draft, but more of a lot more grit, somebody not afraid to kind of get in the trenches and battle it out as opposed to just doing what the play designed.
Right. Those guys are definitely big additions. But, again, and I've said this before on other shows, I think the big addition to Atlanta is going to be Brian Cox. I watched an interview with him today, and it was funny as we talk about physicality. One of the statements that he made was that in his over 60 or 70 some odd fights that he's ever had in his lifetime, he's only lost two, one being to his brother and one being to his best friend. And it was an answer as to a question being asked about how the defensive line was responding to his style of coaching and trying to get that physicality out of them. So I think, again, regardless of whatever talent you've got and who you've brought in, he was able to handpick those people that he wanted on those lines and who he wants to keep. But I think he's going to be the deciding factor this year, and he's going to turn Atlanta into a different defensive team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Reg. I think that the players have been handpicked specifically for what they're going to be doing this year. I spoke on a show before or two in reference to Atlanta being like what you saw in Baltimore. They're going to be fast. They're going to be quick at the point of attack. They're going to get after quarterbacks. They're going to make people pay this year. I mean, just looking at their roster, looking at the defensive line coach, looking at the defensive coordinator who has proven himself by leaps and bounds for me, all Coach Smith has to do is let him go. He's speaking the nastiness and the grit, but now he's going to be held to that because you now have equipped yourself with those type of players who are going to be very, very physical. So you can't ask them to turn up and turn down, you know, accordingly. You're going to have to realize this is what you got, and at the snap of the ball, it's all go.
Yeah, definitely. And, speaking of the changes, especially to the defense and how they're going to get after people, I was surprised to learn today who has kind of emerged as the leader of this defense, because since John Abraham left a year or so ago for Arizona, there hasn't really been that guy to really step up and be known as the leader. But as of a report I saw earlier on Twitter today from the Falcons account, they're saying that Paul Werlow is actually emerging as the leader on the field, and he's kind of the one taking command and turning into that John Abraham on the field.
Absolutely. I saw that today, and I tell you what, considering the position he plays, being the Mike in a 4-3 and inside linebacker in a 3-4, and considering also his performance last year, I mean, he has a nose for the football. And after I've actually had the pleasure of sitting down talking with him at an event that Sean Weatherspoon was hosting for his foundation, and listening to this guy talk, he's that film guy. He's that Ray Lewis prototype that spends all of his time in the film room looking at film. He as well as Sam Baker are the two guys that are mentioned as those two guys that have put on a tremendous amount of muscle in the offseason, because that was the knock on him, was he just needed to get to NFL caliber strength. And man, it appears that he's done that. So I'm glad to see somebody actually emerge and say, hey, I'm going to lead this defense, because that's who better than your linebacker.
Right. I agree with you, Reginald. And one of the things I like to say to add to what you said about Werlow is that he reminds me of Kinkley over in Carolina. I can see him emerging and playing that role out very well this year in Atlanta.
And I like Luke Kuechly out there, he's been such a surprise out there in Carolina. I guess surprise to everybody but Carolina, who said that's why we got the guy. But, yeah, Paul Werlow could easily be the Kuechly of this Falcons team this year.
You know what? The other interesting thing about a Paul Werlow, and a lot of people have to remember guys like him and Jopolo Bartu, were undrafted rookie free agents. And I know we've spoken on other shows about the parity across the league now, and that no longer do you have to go to those big Division I schools to be able to come into the NFL and produce. I mean, that guy, Paul Werlow, is a prime example of a guy that just because you don't get drafted don't mean that you can't come in and turn the tables upside down. So I'm actually very thrilled for him, and I love him as a player.
Absolutely, and especially as far as opportunities, switching gears, Arthur Blank has been speaking very highly of the game they're going to have against Detroit later this year in London. And he says he believes that London could have at least one team there in the near future, maybe even other European cities. He almost feels like if there is going to be a feeder league or if there is going to be an extension of the NFL or other teams, that Europe is the market to attack.
Well, yeah, I'll say my piece and then allow Coach Hill to speak on this because he knows it firsthand from a personnel perspective and how it's going to affect these guys with the time zone difference and so forth and so on. And, Jeremy, I know your team is Jacksonville, but I believe that if there's going to be a team that goes there, if it's not one from the ground up, I think Jacksonville is that team that Mr. Wilf down there wouldn't hesitate to take them over to London if he could.
Well, technically, I haven't claimed a team. Jacksonville is one that I follow heavily, especially with the Jaguars own show I do as well. But they're definitely a team I love to follow, and they're a great team to follow as far as that. But I will turn it over to Coach Hill, who knows a lot more about this and can probably explain it a lot better.
Okay, let's talk about the European cities and the leagues there. One of the issues that they had with NFL Europe is that it was heavily followed. I mean, it wasn't an issue of a fan base. The problem with what happened in Europe, with having NFL Europe there, was the fact that it wasn't year-round. Those players didn't live in those communities. They came for a short amount of time, played, and then were gone. And that was one of the things that kind of irritated, you know, the European followers of American-style football. Now, let's talk about Jacksonville. I do feel that they won't relocate an American team over there. I think it would be best for them to build it from the ground up because now the people can follow, the citizens there can follow those players as they grow and develop and gel together. If you move a whole organization over, then it's the logistics of what you're losing in a market. Will you be able to reclaim a market? So I do feel that at some point you're looking at all these players that are on practice rosters. A lot of these guys that was in second tier, guys, when I use the term second tier, I don't want to say second string, but second tier guys that are right there on the cusp of making teams 53-man roster, I can see them slowly but surely evolving into those European teams, and eventually you get a lot of European players. Like, they do have a lot of nationals over there that have played college ball here in the United States and played well on those teams in Europe. I mean, it's not far-fetched. The question now is, once you do that, what are the logistics of behind playing that game each year? Because unlike playing it in Toronto, Canada, where they put a lot of money in Air Canada and can say we can just go right over the river and play it, what is going to be the logistics behind that? And then maintaining that team, keep in mind they're in another country. So what are the rules that apply to all of that as it pertains to the NFL and having a team that's within your system but out of your country?
Right. And Arthur Blank also, as he was building on this London thing, and as a businessman, I really see that he can see the same, you know, as Shad Khan and Jacksonville sees as well, those potential business-related great things that can happen overseas, especially in London. He also said he also agrees with the Dolphins owner, Stephen Ross, who, you know, has done a pretty good job of cleaning up the mess that he had down there. They both believe that Los Angeles could have one soon as well. Even though we knew the talks had died off, in the back of my mind, I'm still thinking there's a couple threads that L.A. could have a team in the next couple years very easily.
I realistically can see the L.A. move before London, and then possibly Toronto still before London. Now, the reason why I say this, L.A., we've talked about this before. We've hit this subject before. They've had teams before.
Right.
Now, the question is, why didn't those teams make it? It had nothing to do with money, for sure. It wasn't a financial entity. We talked about L.A. or Los Angeles being its own superstar. It's its own superstar. So now where do they fit into the realms of the Lakers and that revenue-based money? How do they fit into the Clippers now, who are a $2 billion purchased team.
I feel like we could talk for an hour and a half on that alone, but you know, that's for another day and another sport.
Right. So now you have to go back and ask yourself, why are you considering the LA market again after you've already tested it a couple of times? If that's the case, why did you leave it? And if you see it as a potential market again, what is really driving the ability of putting the team back in LA?
Right. If it's such a good market, why did the Rams leave for St. Louis, which is, you know, it wasn't the best sports town in the world many years ago when they moved. I mean, it's built into one thanks to the Blues of hockey, the Cardinals of Major League Baseball. You know, college basketball is huge there as well, but the Rams have a toehold in that, as you know, then. But back then, it was almost unheard of to go to a small market like that.
Correct.
I mean, and if they do add a team into L.A., what division do you put? And have to balance it out. You're going to almost have to add four teams at a time just to have a new division. And then that's going to shake up playoffs and all this other stuff. But one person that's probably not sweating an L.A. team, because he would probably enjoy disrupting their wide receivers just as much as he does anybody else, is Mr. Trufant, who is gearing up for a bigger year than his first. And I mean, I see nothing but bright things for this kid. I mean, not just because of his last name, because his older brothers still are quite big terrors in the back in the secondaries. But I think this guy's gonna, if Werlow's gonna be the leader, then this guy is gonna be like his field general or something. He's gonna be right beside him leading the charge.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that kid. Watching him play last year, you could see the growth and development with each and every game that he played. He was very interactive with the fans, which is something that a lot of us Atlanta fans didn't really particularly enjoy about some of the other past players. But this guy, you can see it. He, in his eyes, he wants to compete. I was telling another friend of mine, I think he's that Hall that we had some years ago without all the attitude and the baggage that comes with it. He wants the best receiver. He wants to show that he can compete. I think there were some rumblings that he may have had a little off-season time with Mr. Deion Sanders this off-season, him and Offer as well. So hopefully if that was indeed the case, then I think we're going to see this guy rise and shine this year.
Oh, I have no problems with anybody who wants to learn from the best and do stuff like that. But if they did spend time with Deion, then if I'm a Saint receiver or if I'm a Buccaneer or a Panthers receiver, I'm scared to go their way.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, what I liked about Trufant is that he stepped up early. He was willing to humble himself to learn. What I'm predicting is that along with Trufant Hall, their bodies are going to look different. I mean, no one has seen these guys. They have been ghosts. I haven't heard about them in the media. I haven't heard a lot of talk about
right.
them, which tells me they're somewhere in a remote area, underground in some lab, building themselves, getting ready for this season. So don't be too surprised if Mr. hit the field this year, as well as Mr. Hall, that you don't even recognize them in the beginning because they're going to be studs. I just really think that their game is going to be at the highest level, and they know what is expected of them going into this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
As we're in the last minute of the show here and in the rundown, just last few things on, Reggie, I'll give you the last word on Mr. Trufant.
Well, no, I think Coach Hill said it best. I mean, just the fact that he's been quiet says a lot about what he anticipates that he's going to do. He's not a shy guy about what he believes his abilities are, and he has shown and proved as much as he did as in his rookie year. So Carolina, Saints, Bucks, Packers, beware.
And Pittsburgh as well, as they're trying to rebuild, and they will be down here. And before we get out of here, I did want to mention for anybody looking at getting tickets to Falcons game, if you're unsure which ones you might want to go to, just want to bring up for the fact of nobody's mentioned him in at least three media days. Johnny Football could be here in late October. You'll get to see him hold a clipboard, and it should be great. But for Mr. Reggie Walker and for the coach Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.